Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny, and I'm here with my co-host, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Vinny.
So we've been having this podcast since the end of the regular season, 2014. We've got through all of the off-season, the unbelievable torture that was this past off-season. But here we are, actual spring training games taking place. It couldn't have come any quicker for me, Mike. I mean, it took so long for us to get here, but it's great that we're actually seeing, you know, even spring baseball, which you and I have discussed, is not necessarily the most exciting thing in the world. But for us, I'm eating this up. We've been hungry for this.
I'm liking everything about it, and as I look out my window, it even feels just a little bit of spring. I think I can see a little concrete out there.
You know, and about a week ago, I didn't think we had a shot at seeing concrete until about July. That pile of snow outside my house was pretty ugly, but we've been getting there. So, Mike, we got a good show tonight. We'll talk a little bit about spring training, of course. I actually had the pleasure of being down there last weekend, and I'll talk a little bit about what I saw, the good and the bad. We also have a special guest, Anthony, from the Mets Public Record podcast, will be joining us. And, of course, we should have Artie, although Artie from Brooklyn has been making the rounds on New York Sports Talk Radio today to talk about Darrell Revis. I'm sure when he calls in, hopefully he won't suggest that Revis play shortstop for the Mets team, but knowing Artie, you never know what he's going to say. But we'll get to Artie a little later in the show.
You know, Revis could cover ground. I mean, you know that.
You know, and compared to the range that we have there right now, you know, actually, if you think about it, he might be able to play second and short, but let's not get too crazy. So anyway, let's talk a little bit first about spring training, Mike. Look, I was down there last weekend, and we talked about this before. I mean, I think, you know, spring training is a lot of fun, and especially the workouts, which is what I was there for. And what I saw, look, a lot of what I saw is the stuff that you're reading in the paper. Of course, you know, there are a lot of beards. I would be remiss into not mentioning that there's a lot of facial hair down there. But all joking aside, you know, look, it was a great experience. A few takeaways that I wanted to tell you about. One of them is there's a lot of fan excitement and optimism. I know that we talk a lot about the barometer of fan, you know, the fan taking their temperature by looking at something like Twitter. But when you're in spring training, and I know you could say that this is the time of eternal optimism in spring training, but the fans at spring training are extremely positive, upbeat, excited about the season. They really like what they see. There was even one exchange that we were able to witness where a fan said to Terry Collins as he was walking by to go between fields, he said, "Hey, Terry, looks like you got a playoff team here." And Terry stopped and said to the guy, "I agree with you. We just have to go out and do it on the field." And I know that.
Now, was that fan? You know, was that fan Fred Wilpon?
That fan was not Fred Wilpon.
okay.
Although we may have to talk a little bit later about our reaction to the Fred Terry meeting.
I thought maybe you heard it.
No, that would have been great. But we'll talk maybe a little bit about that whole Fred thing later. But no, so that exchange, look, it's consistent with what we've been reading, Mike, but it just shows that, you know, there's that, you know, optimism even coming from the manager that maybe 2 years ago he wouldn't have responded to that comment. I think now he feels he has to because of the expectation level. Another positive that I wanted to point out, and again, it's not earth-shattering, but when you're there, it really is obvious, is the pitching in this camp, the depth, it is really remarkable. I mean, we were watching a lot of bullpen sessions, and when, you know, it's not, you know, look, there's the Wheelers and the DeGroms and, of course, the Harveys, which we had the pleasure of seeing Harvey one day. but it's even further down. I mean, we're watching the guys like the Akil Morris and the Yanoa, and even Matt Bowman. I mean, and we were just thinking, you know, forget about that. We think that there's an 8-man rotation here if you count, you know, somebody like Montero and Syndergaard. But you got Steven Matz, and you know, who looks like he's, you know, knocking on the door of the major leagues. And you go, you know, you just see it. There's just so much pitching that, you know, you have to be encouraged, especially when you, every time you turn around, you hear about another pitcher on another team's camp getting injured. The depth we have is pretty comforting. And so that's something that I definitely wanted to bring up. And I know you talk about a lot. You've, on this show, talked about how at some point you really need to convert that excess pitching into, you know, filling holes with offense and shortstop and things like that. And that is obviously a point well taken. But the arms that we have, it's pretty deep. And you would think it has to be a positive asset for us both on the field and in potential deals. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think this team is, the way this team is set up, if they're going to, you know, do anything, they've got to pitch, right? And we think the pitchers are there to do that. And so it sure looks like the potential formula is, you know, pitch your brains out, strike everybody out because I don't know if everybody's going to catch the ball, and hopefully hit enough.
You know, Mike, that brings up the other thing I wanted to point out that I observed in spring training, and it was only in workouts, which makes it a little bit more alarming, unfortunately, is, you know, the infield defense is borderline brutal. We were watching fielding drills, not games, you know, coaches hitting ground balls to people. And, you know, they could not get to the ball. They could not catch the ball consistently. I was surprised. Now, look, it's practice. You know, they don't have the adrenaline going. I'm not, you know, you can't write home and say, oh, my God. But you were just a little surprised to see these guys bear, you know, anything on a backhand was not getting caught. You know, and look, it's played out in the game, so it's not just something we saw in practice. You know, the first few spring training games, the infield defense has been pretty bad. Actually, it's beyond the infield defense. Pitchers are making errors. Outfielders are making bad throws. Defense looks to be a huge problem on this team, short of Juan Lazarus. And you know, it's, you mentioned about the pitching being, you know, deep and being key. It's really weird to see a team that has so much pitching and so little defense. I mean, you could argue that, you know, at this stage of his career, David Wright maybe is average. Other than him and Lagares, everybody else in the field is a below average fielder.
Yes, I totally agree with that. That's, in fact, I did the same analysis where I just said, well, okay, let's go around a diamond. You go around a diamond, those are the only two guys where you don't say below average. And you know, you have guys like Flores and Murphy who are well below average. It's an interesting concept that they're trying.
And look, we've said that it seems a little bit inconsistent for somebody like Sandy Alderson, who does so much analysis, to go into a season with that double play combination of Murphy and Flores. And maybe we're just not privy to some things. You know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for 30 seconds and say maybe, you know, they have some newfangled fielding metrics that they think will work, and maybe because of our pitchers and the strikeout pitchers that we have, you know, maybe they've done some analysis that says that this can work. But if we're going with the old school scouting naked eye, it looks pretty weird to be having, you know, pitching and defense minus the defense.
Right, including, I mean, you know, since range is one of the real big factors, I guess the other thing we can include into the potential thinking without knowing what it is, you know, is the idea right now that they're just going to shift their brains out, you know, that they're going to have the right data to move these guys around. We see a lot of that in the game now, right, that you can make up for some lack of range by having the right advanced scouting and moving guys around.
And Mike, that's a great point. And that could be part of what they're thinking, is that if they believe that Murphy and Flores can be average defensive players, and I put quotes around it because I'm not even sure around that, but maybe they think that they, through shifting and through data and all that sort of thing, that maybe they can be even a little better than that. or at least get to that average if they look below average with them, their range and their fielding ability. You know, that's a great point, and maybe there's something to that. We shall see. They're going to be put to the test, that's for sure. Or else, you know, maybe every time Dan Worthen goes to the mound, the message is going to be, all right, we got to strike everybody out.
Exactly. Now, I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm going to, Vinny. It's just hitting me as we're on right now. Was there anybody that, you know, before you went down to Port St. Lucie, you know, you weren't really even thinking about the guy? And it could be a guy that's a couple years away. He doesn't have to be a guy that's going to help this year. That when you saw him, you know, just from an eye, you know, the eye test thing, you said, hey, wow, I didn't, this guy looks interesting to me now.
There was a guy who, the eye test, it's a name that we know. It was just different when I saw him, and that was Brandon Nimmo. The guy's built rock solid, and we saw him take batting practice, and he was hitting ropes. Now, again, I know he's a big prospect, so he should.
Right.
But he really looked like a big leaguer in the cage, if you know what I mean.
Okay, I mean, and he's a guy we haven't seen a lot of, that's for sure.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why it stood out to me, is because maybe I didn't quite know what to expect. He's just, let's face it, a lot of these guys are just names on a screen to us. We really can't see them in action. And he was a guy that when I saw him in the cage, he really looked like he hit the ball. Now, look, it's batting practice. I grant you that. But he was a little bigger guy than I thought he was. And he was, you know, hitting ropes. That was encouraging to see. Now, I did not see him when I was there, but the other name who obviously is really getting a lot of ink from the offensive side is Mike Conforto. From a couple of games that he's actually played in spring training, which I guess he wasn't supposed to. He's not even really invited to the big league camp. I'm not sure how the heck this even works. But he's played in a couple of games and has been pretty impressive with the bat. Now, you would think he should be further away than Nimmo, but at this point, I'm not quite sure. I think they could start to be getting close to being arriving at around the same time here, if you think about it.
I mean, Conforto played college ball, and the hope would be that he would come fast. I've read that they're considering starting him in low A Savannah. If they do that with him, because I don't understand what he was doing in Brooklyn last year, they're clearly doing it just to raise my blood pressure, but we'll see.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, I guess it's possible. Don't reach for the heart pills if he starts the season there, because maybe it's a weather thing and maybe he'll play there the first month and then go to Binghamton. You never know.
I just wanted to point out that high A is Port St. Lucie and the weather's usually pretty good there, too.
You got that right.
But we'll see what they do. But they didn't do anything yet.
No, you're right. Look, and overall, I would say, you know, the experience was great. Spring training is great. If everybody has the opportunity to do it, you should do it. A lot of fun. You get away from the northeast cold weather, and you get to see these things. And you know, seeing these guys in batting cages and fielding grounders and watching bullpen sessions, it's stuff you just can't do at the big league level. The access is just not there. So it was really cool to be able to do that. So now I guess, Mike, we should talk a little bit about things that have happened, you know, in the games. And I guess the biggest news with this team will always be revolving around Matt Harvey. And there's been a lot, you know, Matt Harvey's first outing last week was, you know, a major event. And he, you know, he was throwing 99 miles an hour. He had two innings, you know, two hitless innings. I don't recall. I think they might have been two perfect innings. And so everybody was raving about how all was right with the world. You know, he came back today. He pitched two innings again, I guess 2 2/3. Wasn't necessarily perfect, but, you know, it's spring training. It's not a big deal. It's really about him being healthy. I guess he was reaching 93, 95 today, and people were saying maybe it was a slow gun. I love that slow gun, fast gun thing. I always get such a joke, a laugh out of that. How is that possible? You know.
Well, when Glavin pitched, it was always the slow gun.
I think it was the slow arm, not the slow gun. But look, no matter what happened today in spring training, the game, you know, today, the only news that matters with Matt Harvey is that he's healthy. And so far, he really looks to be, you know, completely healthy. And that's probably the most important thing in this entire spring training for the Mets. And so from that perspective, that's the big news, and then it's positive news.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny how it is with Harvey. I saw that first game, and, you know, it's just something about it. He's hitting a 99 on the gun, and you're just going, whoa. You know, we saw him before he got injured. We know how good, you know, he can be and what type of pitcher he is. But there was something about, you know, something so nice and rewarding to see him on a mound again, doing it again. Spring training or no. So you talk about the optimism of the people down there. You know, that's got to be, for a lot of us, a huge reason for any optimism. I mean, he wasn't on the team last year, and now he is again.
You know, and what's amazing, Mike, is, and I completely agree, and it's, you know, it's undeniable that he is the center of the Met universe. But what's, you know, if you take a step back, that is kind of amazing. If you think about how little he's actually played for the team, the place that he holds, and that he is the center of the Met universe, you know, he's got how many? He's got, what's the number of career wins? Is it 12 or 15 or some crazy number?
It's not a lot. I think what happened was he had that run that was Gooden-esque. It was, you know, and because of that, he really captured everybody's imagination, including Doc himself. And I think that's a lot of it right now. Right, we'll see what happens now. And this is, I'm not trying to go cold water here and say he's not going to be good or anything like that. But as we know, Doc himself didn't do that on a year by year, every year, as great as Doc was. So that'll be interesting, too. How will people react if he's just great and not out of this world?
You know what? I'm going to counter that with the way that the pitching staff is structured, it might actually be okay. Meaning, you know, let's use the Gooden reference because I love it. I mean, Gooden, the 85 was 24-4, 153 ERA. Okay. And if we say that that was the kind of year that he was having, Harvey, even though the statistics weren't exactly the same, but the feel was the same. You know, in 86, Gooden was what? He won 17 games. He had like a 270 ERA, something like that. Don't hold me to the number. And so it was a step back, but it didn't matter because of what the other guys did. And when you have, you know, DeGrom, you have Wheeler. It's funny how Cologne is a forgotten guy, but, you know, statistically, the guy's pretty good. You know, we could actually, if he's not a 20-game winning Harvey, but he's a 16, 17-game winning Harvey, but these other guys do all that too, it will be fine. And, yeah, there might be those whole what's wrong with Harvey discussions, but it won't really hold the team back because that's not really what it's about. It's not that they need him to win three out of every four of the starts for us to be successful. You know, we have a lot of guys who are capable of winning 16, 17 games in this staff.
Oh, sure. And let's turn that the other way. I mean, let's turn it around to even, you know, as another positive comment. I'll bring up a negative thing, but hopefully taken in a positive way. As great as Harvey was that year, where was the team? I mean, the team wasn't, right? The team was nothing. Because one pitcher, it's great. I mean, and I tried to make all those Harvey starts and get out to Citi Field myself. It was great theater, and it was great to watch, and we loved it. But because it's on only once every 5 days, if you know you don't have enough around them, it wasn't going to get it done. So absolutely, the depth of the staff was the key in 86, and if the depth of the staff is there again, that would even if Harvey's not otherworldly this year, the team will be better. I agree.
And look, he's thrown two spring training starts. He's thrown, I guess it's 4 2/3 innings. So it's pretty ridiculous to make any kind of, you know, projections based off of that. However, I will. And I'll say, look, if he stays healthy and he has the kind of stuff that he's had now and just knowing the kind of competitor that he is and the pitcher that he is, you know, he's going to be fine. I mean, I can't, you know, maybe he's not going to be Clayton Kershaw, but he's going to be fine. He's going to win a heck of a lot of games. He's going to be keep us in a lot of games. You know, he's going to be the least of our problems. And that's very encouraging considering, you know, how much we were waiting for him to come back. But now, look, now let's go to something that's a little bit, you know, that's the happy side of what's come out of spring. Let's go to one of the negatives that's come out of spring. And there's, you know, already word that Josh Edgen had to get had some discomfort in his arm, elbow, and that he was spending the day today in New York with the Mets doctors being examined and getting an MRI and all that stuff. Now, they haven't released any information on that yet, but, you know, it can't, no matter what, the best it's going to be is going to be one of those, you know, he needs to shut it down for a couple of weeks. You know, that's the best news we're going to get. But look, that's not even the issue. The issue is, you know, look, having him be injured is, A, not surprising, considering the workload he had last year. And if you go on history, you know, the last few years when the Mets have had a left-handed reliever that they've given a heavy workload to, they've inevitably broken down. And we can go to Pedro Feliciano, although I don't think I've ever seen a workload like the teams have given Pedro Feliciano back in the day. Tim Burdick, Scott Rice, you know, these guys all ended up, you know, on the disabled list because of being used day after day after day, and that's what happened with Edgen. And it just kind of begs the question, you know, how did Sandy not get, another left-handed reliever for this season to hopefully avoid wearing this other guy out?
So you're not like the president of the Sean Gilmartin fan club?
Look, I am not. I'm not anti Sean Gilmartin. I'm not anti.
That's the other lefty,
Dario Alvarez.
Yes.
I'm pro, let's have some options here so that we don't have yet another left-handed reliever's arm fall off. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's strange. We talk about Sandy as being analytical and having, you know, the kind of guy who, you know, does a lot of research and analysis. And this seems like one that the average, you know, guy on the street knows the deal. You know, we wear our pitcher, left-handed relievers out. We should get a couple just so that we can, you know, keep them breathing. Sandy doesn't seem to care. Unless, maybe you hit something, Mike. Maybe he thinks they're so interchangeable that it just doesn't matter. He can grab a Gilmartin and anybody and they'll all be good.
There could be, there could be something to that. We can talk a little bit, if we have more time later in the show, about some of that, but there's, you know, it's a funny, guys come out, when Pedro Feliciano first hit is a really quality guy for us, for instance, it was a kind of out of nowhere thing. And so, and I'll give you just two names, and that was one name, and a guy that we spent some real money on to supposedly help with that was Scott Schoenweiss, and that was not a good pitcher. So it's a funny role to fill. Yeah, maybe you need lightning in a bottle. We'll find out. I don't want to absolutely, you know, I get critical of Sandy, but when it comes to left-handed pitchers, I know that that's a really tricky market.
No, you're right, and it's a little bit of a head scratcher that there weren't at least one. I know Gilmartin was brought in. You're right on that, but at least a proven option. You know, there was Phil Koch, and there were a few other guys who went relatively cheap. I'm not talking about Miller.
Right.
You know, who got huge money from the Yankees.
Right.
You know, I'm talking about guys who got pretty reasonable contracts. You just would wonder why that wouldn't reach the Mets, you know, priority list. But
right.
Like now
Rice is back too.
That's true. We actually, quick story, just before, we have our special guest ready to join us in a second, Anthony from the Mets Public Record podcast. Scott Rice, his left arm looks fine. He was bowling next to me at Duffy's in Port St. Lucie. He was with Anthony Recker and Carlos Torres, and he was bowling with his left hand, and he had, you know, pretty decent spin on the ball. So I'll give you that to my bowling scouting report. But here we are.
Okay.
We have Anthony from the Mets Public Record podcast on with us. Anthony, hi. You're on with Vinny and Mike, the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast.
Hello. Hello, fellow Mets fans.
How are you, sir?
How's it going?
What's up, Vinny? Hey, Mike. Mike, you were on my podcast not too long ago.
Yes, and thanks for returning the favor, Anthony. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. I like this time slot. I got all my energy here, but sometimes I do the podcast a little late, and by the time it's halfway through, I can't even remember half the guys' names on the team.
Oh, when you had me on, I had a, you know, I had to put up a second pot of coffee that night.
That's not my fault. My co-host Rich, he has kids. So he's got to put them to bed and everything. So I don't know. I don't have any
kids. I understand priorities. So a couple of questions, because we got, you know, real baseball going on now. I think Vinny and I talked about it a little bit earlier, but it's hard not to talk to everybody about the Harvey thing. He's back, and he was on TV the one time. I didn't know if you got a chance to see him throw. Did you get a chance to see him pitch?
Actually, it's funny that you say that, because he really is a star, and not just a baseball star. I think he kind of transcends, you know, just the world of sports. He's kind of like our A-Rod, I guess, in a good way. Because what happened was, I heard that he was pitching on Friday. This is last Friday. So where I work is right next door is a bar. So me and a couple of Mets fans at work went down there and watched the game. You know, I wouldn't normally do that on a Friday, but just because he was pitching at 1 o'clock, it was like perfect timing. And he was really amped up. I mean, the guy, his adrenaline was running, and I'm surprised his nose didn't start bleeding, right, just to give us a little.
I kept waiting for that.
Yeah, because he was so excited, you know, like get the blood flowing. But I was impressed. I mean, let's face it, though. I mean, these guys are, you know, the Detroit Tigers, most of them are probably farmhands. I was happy to see that he was, you know, hitting the 99, and he was able to get that one guy out with a curveball. But this last outing, I know he pitched okay. I know that he gave up one run himself, and then another guy he inherited runner scored for Harvey. But he's sometimes a little too honest, and he did say that he was feeling kind of sluggish. This start, and maybe some people kind of use that as a headline now. I don't know what you guys think of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing about Matt. I don't think he fits, you know, what the Mets like in a profile as far as the media stuff, because he's going to, you know, I think he likes to talk. I think he likes the spotlight, and I think he's very upfront. And, yeah, they probably would have rather he kept that to himself.
Definitely. But I'm also excited for these other
guys. I'm waiting for them to use the phrase dead arm period.
That's coming. I think he used it for Wheeler the other day, too. I saw him really get beat up.
Yeah, I did hear Ron Darling say that there is going to be a time, and this is going to be the big test for Harvey, when how he handles that dead arm period, because I think every pitcher goes through it, even when they're not coming off Tommy John.
That's right.
So that's going to be a big deal for him.
And so now another question for you, Anthony, is with the exhibition games going on, is there anybody that you sort of have your eye on in the spring that you're hoping breaks through a little bit, or if not breaks through, has a better year, you know, a bounce back year or a better year? Is there any one guy that you have any focus on this spring?
Yeah, actually, I heard you guys talking, and you mentioned Michael Conforto, and I got to be honest with you, this guy, I know you said he's going to be in high A, probably. He's not going to make the team out of spring, but you got to be happy with him. He seems like a real good hitter at the plate, outfielder, which the Mets need, left-handed hitter. I'm a little disappointed that, the thing is, him, Conforto, and I do like Plawecki too, Kevin Plawecki. I don't know if you want to talk about him later on. But the thing about the Mets is, like, you know, they went ahead. They went out there. They signed Kadire. And they have all this young pitching. And I know they're trying to maybe offset some of the young pitching with some of these veteran guys like Kadire and Granderson. But why not, you know, if the Mets don't really make the playoffs this year, it's not like they're going for the brass ring this year. Why not maybe just bring up a Conforto and, like you said, Brandon Nimmo, you guys said before. I'm a little disappointed that, I mean, they're trying to kind of compensate the fans and show that they're going to spend a little bit of money, but I don't know. I'm a little skeptical with the signing of Kadire.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. Overall, for really the last 4 years, that's always been a concern of mine about whatever you want to call this period. You know, most people would call it a rebuild, but I never felt like there was a total rebuild either. It was kind of like a patch all along. And I always feel like they're trying to put together an 83-win season instead of just, you know, they didn't even really blow it up ever. We know they didn't trade Reyes, and I don't want to go through all the history. But, right, there's always this mix of not a real total youth movement, but not, you don't really feel like they're all in. And it's a little disconcerting to me because, as you're saying, will you ever really have it all firing together? You know, or are you just going to keep plodding along with these mediocre teams? I think the pitching, hopefully, is now going to be top-notch and something that could, you know, be playoff-worthy, I'll call it. But I am a little suspicious about the overall squad. So you bring up some good concerns there.
Just to expound on that a little bit, you know, Sandy Alderson, this is the Sandy Alderson experiment, I guess. I mean, you have, like you say, why? Look at the Royals. I mean, most of those guys were young, I would think, and they all kind of came up together. There was this camaraderie that they had down in the farm system. And now the Mets, you know, with Sandy Alderson, if they don't succeed this year, I think they're going to be hit harder, even more so than they were last year, you know, in terms of people questioning, you know, really what they're all about. Because Terry Collins right now is on the hot seat. We all know that. They didn't give him an extension. So I'm really interested to see what happens in the next 50, 60 games of the regular season.
I think these 50, 60 games are going to be in a lot of, really the most interesting since 2009. I think you've got a situation where, you know, Vinny mentioned when he was down at Port St. Lucie, there's a lot of the fans have been, you know, sort of directed, not saying it's bad, to be very optimistic about this season, to feel like it's going to be different this season, that this isn't just going to be another losing season. If the team comes through, that's going to be great and gets off to a good start. If the team gets off to a bad start, people are going to be more upset because they are, you know, their expectations have been raised. And I think Terry is clearly, you know, the guy, the first guy that's going to feel it if it goes that way.
I know Vinny. I was going to say, you guys talked about the defense, and that's true. I mean, you look at even Duda, right? This guy, he's not a good defensive first baseman. And then the Mets just really, that's definitely a hole right now, I think, in terms of, and the bullpen, too. I'm a little skeptical about the bullpen. You know, the fact that they really didn't spend any money on the bullpen, you know, not even those bum signings that they get, like Farnsworth and what was the other guy that they brought in last year? Yeah, at least Valverde didn't get us. That's right.
I had to really think. And I've been spending a lot of time trying to forget him, and now here I had to remember him again.
Yeah. Well, that's like sports. I couldn't even tell you who was in the playoffs last year. Oh, man. All I know is the Giants won the Super Bowl. I mean, the World Series.
Yeah. Well, so when you put it all together, when you do put it all together, Anthony, you know, you're giving us some of your concerns, right? That, you know, we're all, you can't help it. You get a little nervous about this and that when you follow a team. So, which is your biggest one? Is there one thing where you look at it and say, I think we might be weak in a particular area and it really worries you?
Well, I think, you know, last year we saw the double plays. They weren't even able to make double plays. I mean, how many times did we sit there and bang the side of a couch when you thought there was going to be a double play? And then also the walks, right? How many times did the pitchers with the old too many walks? And I hate to come out. I didn't think I was going to come out and be such a negative Nelly over here. But I was just thinking about it, and I don't know. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid yet, you know, with the Mets. I'm excited. I like the pitching staff, but
right.
Let me try to help you a little bit, Anthony.
Yeah, let me try to help you a little bit. What about the pitch? I guess it's the pitching. Like, what do you feel good about? You must feel really good about something in spring.
I'm usually a very positive guy. I don't know what happened. That I can't, no. No, actually, the pitching is great. You know who I like? Jacob DeGrom is somebody that I'm looking forward to. And I want to see Jerry's Familia also continue to be a real dominant reliever.
He could be important. Sure.
What I was going to say to make you feel better, Anthony, is you had mentioned the walks. Fear not. Fred Wilpon actually went to Terry the other day to tell him he was also concerned about the number of walks. So, you know, if it's on Fred's mind, you know it's going to get resolved, right? No problem. I'm sure Terry will now flick that switch and get that resolved since Fred asked him to. So no need to worry about walks anymore.
Oh, yeah. And you know, Wheeler is definitely the one of the culprits. He's got to learn how to be a little more efficient with his pitching, I think. You know, we were talking about it on our podcast. Rich had brought it up that when you look at his game log, he was throwing about 120 pitches in six innings. So, you know, for him to take the next step, I think he has to be a little more efficient with his pitches. I understand he's a strikeout pitcher, but he really has to try to fine-tune that part of his game.
You know, that's a great point, Anthony. It was something I noticed last year. I started to look around baseball, and we have a young staff, and I think the younger the pitchers are, and that's one little red flag I would say about our young staff, we know the way they get treated, whether you want to call it baby, whatever you want to call it, they're not being developed to throw as much, you know, or as long as previous generations of pitchers. And you started to see we had a lot of guys, you know, Wheeler especially, you know, forget nine innings, seven, they can't go seven. And you start to realize, you know, it's still 25-man roster. And, you know, you can maybe, once you're carrying 12 pitchers, you're kind of at your limit, and you're burning out your bullpens. And if you were ever in a race, you get to September and everybody's done. You know, everybody in that bullpen would be done. So those starters have to figure out a way to be more efficient, I think, and lengthen out. That's a great point. I got one more for you, and then we'll see. Vinny might have a one or two for you too, Anthony. Which
yeah, sure.
is, so bottom line, I like the old bottom line thing. I'm an old, you know, finance guy in my real job. What do you think we've got here? Do you think we've got a team that could sneak into the playoffs? So you know, you don't sound like you're in an optimistic mood. Maybe you want to call back another day. What do you think we've got?
No, I'm in an optimistic mood. You know what it is? The Mets are definitely going to be the Mets are definitely going to be in the thick of it, I think, because of the pitching and because of the fact that they have their feet to the fire, pretty much all of them, you know. And but the only thing with the Mets now that has something going against them is that the Nationals, they're so good, you know. I mean, the fact that they're pretty much going to probably win 90 games, you know, to say the least, you know, for the Nationals. But then again, they remember the Phillies that year? They had Halliday, Cliff Lee, and Hamels. So, I mean, I know people are touting this pitching staff, and maybe I'm trying to look at the maybe like a slip-up for the pitching on in the Nationals, but they have the team to beat right now, and if the Mets, they have to come out of the gate, I would think, toe-to-toe with the Nationals to give them a sense that they can actually win, you know, go to the postseason this year. So I'm going to say 84 wins.
Yeah, it's not – hey, look, 84 wins, you're probably playing some games in September that are going to, you know, get us to watch. So that wouldn't be the end, right? It's not what we really want, but it's not the end of the world, that's for sure. All right, Vinny, do you, before we give Anthony the rest of his night back, do you have anything you wanted to ask him?
Yeah, I did want to ask him one question. It's probably the question that we have been asking ourselves on this podcast since we started in November virtually every time, which is, do you think that Wilmer Flores will be able to play shortstop for this team, or will they be looking for someone else in midseason because he just can't cut it?
No, it's true. The guy has a lot of liability in terms of his defense. He, you know, they always say he makes the plays he's supposed to make, but he doesn't have much range. So I don't know if that's an insult or a compliment. But the thing is, they're spending a lot of time with Matt Reynolds. I'm not sure. I don't really know how well he is in the field. But if he's the type of guy that if he's able to really show them that he's a good player, he may be able to crack the roster as a bench player because right now they have, I know they like New and Heiss. They also have Ruben Tejada, which I don't know what they're doing with him because they have him playing third base, right? He's playing third base now. I don't know what the heck. And then Eric Campbell. So if a guy like Matt Reynolds, I mean, he's 24 years old. He's not like a young guy anymore. So I would think that if Flores slips up, then maybe they can have Reynolds step right in as a player. I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned Mike Matt Reynolds. That's a great point that Anthony do bring up. I mean, Matt Reynolds is somebody who maybe you're seeing him more in spring training because maybe the Mets don't love Wilmer as much as Sandy told us every day in the winter that they do.
Yep. Yes. Agreed. Now, Anthony, one other thing too before we let you go, just you know, for folks that listen to us, I didn't know when your next podcast is. If you wanted to give yourself a plug, you know, when you guys are going, we alluded to it's later in the evening. So, when are you scheduled to go again?
Well, actually, before I let you know, I hooked up with the Baseball Bloggers Alliance. I don't know if you ever heard of them. And I'm housing their show on my show page. So we've been doing the BBA Live, we call it. And I started it off for them because nobody was taking the reins. And I hosted with Ricky Keeler. He's a Yankee fan. And we pretty much talk about the Major League Baseball. And we did a show last night. We had some Texas Rangers guys on, bloggers. And they were talking about the Rangers. You think we have it bad. Let me tell you, the Rangers, they have so many injuries. They were telling me all the injuries, and I felt bad, you know, even some of the prospects. But anyway, we have that. Usually that goes on at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Right now it's on Tuesday night, but once the season starts, we might change that. I'm trying to get Rich together for tomorrow night. We're going to do the Mets public record and talk about the Mets.
Okay.
But maybe he could put his kids to bed early and get on the podcast. But wait, before you let me go, I wanted to say, I know, Vinny, you said you were down in spring training. Did you see the billboard? I know me and Mike were emailing back and forth about the billboard down there.
I did not see the billboard. Believe it or not, I think it went up the day I came home. So I didn't get to see it. Mike and I have been talking about the billboard periodically. I'm getting a kick out of the fact that it's getting a lot of press, or at least, you know, internet comments on the billboard. And sometimes the comments are, you know, almost derogatory. But the fact that they're bringing it up and mentioning it, that's actually the point. Even if you're going to bring it up and say bad things about it, you're raising awareness that there's this campaign and this billboard. You're almost contributing to the cause even by doing that. I get a laugh out of that.
Yeah, I think it's I don't know. I don't think Wilpon's going anywhere.
No, I don't think the billboard is going to make him pull off of I-95 when he sees it and start calling at Goldman Sachs about looking for a sale. Somehow I don't think that's exactly how it's going to play out.
All right. Well, if you guys ever want to call, I know last time Mike called him a Vinny. If you want to call in, we got the whole season coming up, and I'll reach out to Mike and see if you guys want to call in.
Definitely. We definitely will take you up on it. And thank you very much for joining us. We really do appreciate it, Anthony.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right,
you have a good night,
Anthony.
Soon.
All right.
Great spot from Anthony from the Mets Public Record podcast. He brought up some really good points. You know, it's funny. You know, I know he said about him being that he wasn't being negative and that he was pretty optimistic and that he feels good. But the fact that somebody who is optimistic thinks they're going to win 84 games and still be in the hunt still has those kinds of concerns that he raised. It kind of shows you that the strange team that we've got put together here. You know, it's very loaded. One, you know, it's got one aspect that is, you know, really awesome, and then a ton of holes. It's a strange team, Mike.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, you know, and I think a lot of us, look, we've been burned, you know, it's been a lot of bad years in a row, so I think there's a little bit of, you know, post-traumatic Mets disorder, so we're afraid to get too optimistic, so there might be some of that. Hopefully some of that's what's driving it all for us, too.
No, you're right, it could be. The one other comment that Anthony raised that I want to talk about for a minute before we get to Artie from Brooklyn. Who probably has two phones, one phone on another channel talking about the Jets and one phone for us. But he did bring up Matt Reynolds. You and I previously had not discussed Matt Reynolds. you know, I think it's interesting. He has played a decent amount in spring training, although Anthony also mentioned about how Ruben Tejada played third base today, which has to mean absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things. You know, he's been playing and he's been hitting. His fielding's been okay. I don't have the stats in front of me, Mike, but I think he's only made one error, which for a week on this team is not bad. As bad as that sounds. But he's hit the ball, and, you know, he probably looks like if he hits and he could feel decent, that he's probably next in line to Flores if Flores isn't successful. What's your take, Mike?
You know, I'm just not a big Tejada guy, but I will say this. You know, I still speak a lot to my old blogging partner, Jimmy Preller, and we talked on the phone just the other day, and he said to me again, you watch, by the time, you know, we're 2 weeks into the season, it's going to be Tejada. And
you know,
I guess it could be, right?
That's an unbelievable segue, because Artie from Brooklyn, who will be joining us, said he wanted to talk a little bit about Tejada, although where Artie's mind is today, there's a chance he even forgets Tejada's name. But Artie from Brooklyn, New York sports radio favorite, is on with us right now. Artie, let me just, before you start talking, let me remind you. This is the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is not ESPN Radio. This is not FAN. I know you've been on every radio station in the East Coast today to talk about Darrell Revis. Unless you think he's signed part of that huge money contract just to play shortstop, I'm not sure he fits in this podcast, Artie.
As long as the Mets do not give $20 million to Tejada, I'm good with it. You know,
Artie, first of all, we will give you 1 minute before you talk about it to give you, you must feel great about all the moves that the Jets are making. The Revis moves must have made you go crazy, and I'm sure you used all of your cell phone minutes today talking about Revis. So, but congratulations on that.
I'm the one Jets fan that didn't want Revis until we got him. And now that we have him, I'm glad that he's, you know, I'm glad we have him. But I've been scorned by him because he left us and went to the Patriots and then they went to the Super Bowl. But it does make us better. And so I'm happy. I didn't think it was actually going to happen. I know he's money hungry, but I thought he was just using the Mets, just like, using the Jets, no pun, just like other people use the Mets sometimes, I guess, to drive the price up and then go elsewhere. So,
Artie, what's your thoughts on the Mets today?
Here's the thing that bothers me, okay? We're trying to win with pitching, but yet Sandy thinks that more offense is needed. I understand we need to score. The worst thing you could do is just have a horrible defensive team. And if you're going to have below average second baseman defensively, average at best at third, and can't throw anybody out at catcher, okay, wouldn't you think that you need the best glove that you possibly could have at shortstop? I mean, is Flores batting eighth going to win you that many games? Because I know he could definitely cost you games when you don't turn a double play or when you're leading the league in errors. This team could actually lead the league in every position except win the gold glove in center field. Has that ever been done?
I don't know about that. That's true. It's funny how they have one of the best defensive players in baseball. You know, him, I guess you'd say Legarris and Simmons on the Braves, the best defensive players. But if you take him off the team, they have some of the worst defensive players in the league at their position.
Did you see Kadiah, Vin?
Look, Kadiah is supposed to be average, but I think he's played mostly right field, and so just to make sure he fits in with the team and can't field well, we're going to move him. I think that's the rumor. We don't want him to feel over, you know, we don't think he'd be self-conscious because he can catch the ball, so we're going to play him out of position.
Are they playing him in right or left? But to be fair,
Terry hasn't finalized where he's playing in left and who he's playing in right.
I think it only makes sense that Granderson would play left since he doesn't have the arm, and then you might as well make Kadia comfortable in right. No?
That would make sense to me, but in one of the spring games, they did play Kadia in left. Again, they played Goddard at third today, so where they play in spring training doesn't matter. And tomorrow, from what I understand, Will Ferrell is playing all on eight positions on different teams, and I don't think Will Ferrell is a natural shortstop, so we'll just leave him out of the equation. So it probably doesn't matter where you play.
And one more thing. I mean, Whitey Herzog used to put as many lefties as he could in the bullpen. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Whitey was all that, but just that theory where you would need at least two lefties. We have one, and now we have none. You know, you would think a little looking into the future. Sandy is not going to make any moves. Would at least get a lefty in the bullpen. What are we going to do, sign Feliciano again? All right, guys. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks for calling, Artie.
All right, man. Take care.
Be well, Art.
So Artie from Brooklyn, and you could tell he was hoarse from all his phone calls today about Revis. look, he's got two great points. The point about the defense, the shortstop, and the point about the lefty. I guess the rebuttals, and look, they're not great rebuttals, Mike, is who would you use? I don't think Tejada is good enough defensively to use instead of Flores. Tejada's a weird guy to read defensively. 2 years ago, he was pretty good defensively. I wouldn't say great. And then the next year, he was actually bad defensively. So I don't really know anymore what kind of defensive player he is, but he doesn't strike me as this, you know, slick fielding, all glove, no stick, shortstop, you know, the prototypical one that you think of. He doesn't give me that feel. So I don't know if he's even good enough defensively to be the option that you would say, let's go with the surefire glove instead of Flores. You would have to have imported that guy, and right here on the air, we talked before the Yankees got him that perhaps C.D. Gregorius was that guy. Obviously, that ship has sailed. You know, maybe that kind of player would be a choice over a Flores. But to me, the guys we have, you know, even, you know, somebody may call up and say Tovar, you know, guys like that, I would not be playing over a Flores. I just think we don't have that guy.
I don't think we have a shortstop, so that's not new.
And then, look, Artie piled on about the lefty situation. Look, the one thing I will say, and I know you want to talk a little bit about lefties, is we can all talk, you know, Sandy could say it's not a big deal, Terry can say it's not a big deal, but in the eighth inning when Freddie Freeman is coming up, I'm going to wish we had a lefty.
That is true, but would you do you wish we had any lefty? Because I have a list.
I want to
get
a list.
I broke the list up. I broke the list up into the good, the bad, the notable, and the who. And I want to start with the who, because these are guys that we used. Sure.
Before you go there, I want to revise my statement and say if Freddie Freeman is up, I do not want a lefty. I want an open base because he's going to hit the lefty anyway.
That is true. I want to start with the who, because you might know better than me. I'm going to give you a list of names, and the reason I'm giving you these list of names is they're all left-handed. I assume we used them as loogies, because I don't remember them. And they're within, like, not a long time. We're not talking about 30 years ago. Some of these guys are 2013 and 2014, and I don't remember.
Oh,
2013, I don't remember them. So you tell me if you remember these names. Well, I'll go through the whole list. You tell me if you how many you remember. Maybe it's all. Maybe it's my Alzheimer's kicking in. Tim Hamulak, Mike Matthews, Willie Colazo, John Switzer, Mike O'Connor, Justin Hampson, Garrett Olson, Sean Henn. The last two were 2013.
That is a heck of a list. Actually, look, there were a couple of names that I remember, but actually, some of them I don't even remember being in games. I remember us acquiring them, giving them non-roster invitees, and then not remembering anything about them, which is pretty funny. Now, look, that list of who's makes you realize that Sandy's philosophy is, if your lefty will bring you in, why the heck not? Because none of those guys are anybody.
No, they're a bunch of nobodies. But, you know, I'm going to – now here, I'm going to defend Sandy and give you a list of guys, and this is all pre-Sandy, who were bad. And some of them got, like, a little bit of money when we signed them. Graham Lloyd, Mike Stanton, Scott Schoenweiss, Ricardo Rincon.
Yeah, you know, those,
you know, they were bad.
Those guys were bad, and they were touted guys. Guys who most of the signings would have been the kinds of guys who would have gotten decent money this year. I think a couple of those guys got like 3-year deals.
Yeah.
And they were bad, and that gives you, again, more credence to the don't spend on the bullpen philosophy.
Now I'm going to give you two guys that you're going to want to know their names because they're notable Mets. And as soon as I tell you who they are, you're going to know why they're notable. The first one was like Sandy's signature move when he got the big prospect, big as a relative term, Daniel Herrera, in a trade for K-Rod. And he's notable because, as far as I know, since that guy that Bill Veeck used in 1951, he's the first midget to actually play in a baseball game, Daniel Herrera.
The one thing about Daniel Herrera that I really liked is, you know, at the stadium when they sell the game used jerseys, his jersey would fit me.
Yes, it would. And then the other notable, you got to remember this guy. I'm going to go back, but not too far, a little bit further. And I don't know if you were there that day. We'll find out in a second. But I was around when he did his mad dash around the stadium. I was there to see the great Dasang Ku run around the bases.
They suck. All right, look, I was not there. I did have tickets, and I couldn't go because my son was sick that day. But we watched that game at home. And that moment was one of the most surreal moments in history, in Met history, because the pitch, it looked like he wasn't going to swing at all. Actually, I think he had an at-bat before the Randy Johnson at-bat in a different game. And he left the bat on the shoulder in a ridiculous batting stance that was obvious he had no intention of swinging. And then here he was against Randy Johnson, a lefty, who lefties can't hit, and he hit a double, right? And then he scored ground ball to the infield.
And then a crazy trip home on the head. I mean, I just remember the crazy slide at the plate. And, right, it's hard, you know, when you hear that name, that's all I remember, right? You don't remember anything else about him. I don't think he did anything on the mound that was too noteworthy.
Now, there were two other lefties that you didn't mention. And I'm going to go a little bit further back, probably more to like 99, 2000. I'm going to give you my favorite lefty, Met lefty reliever, and then, well, not favorite because I guess Tug McGraw goes in a separate category. He's not a loogie. True loogie, and that my least favorite true loogie. My favorite true loogie was Dennis Cook.
I have him down on my good list. Yes, he was good.
He was good.
Maybe the best we ever had.
A few years. Might have been the best, but the worst, in my opinion, had to be Rich Rodriguez. Oh, my God.
He was really bad.
Was Rich Rodriguez the Omar era?
I don't know whose era he was.
we've got about a minute left. Do you want to give me a few more names?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the rest of the guys that I thought were good when I looked at the list. All right, and again, Pedro Feliciano. Burdick was pretty good, right? For a little while there last year, Dana Evelyn. Too bad we didn't bring him back, right? He was good.
That's
and
true.
His Hinaro Takahashi was pretty good.
Yes, he was.
And then one last quick thing about lefties is one thing about the Mets, you mentioned McGraw, is we have, and it's not the norm, a lot of lefty closers, though. McGraw, Franco, Myers, Orozco. So maybe that's why we didn't have loogies.
And Billy Wagner, too.
Look at that, and I forgot him.
That is interesting because that's rare.
It's rare, but we do it all the time. Right. We do it all the time.
That's true. Excellent. Well, look, let's see what happens with edging. Maybe we're jumping off the cliff a little bit too early. Hopefully it'll be the quote-unquote dead arm. But that's about all the time we have. Mike, thanks for a great show. We want to thank Artie from Brooklyn for taking a stop off of his Revis media tour to join us. And thank Anthony from the Mets Public Record podcast. We'll be back at you in a couple of weeks. And Mike, go St. John's tomorrow.
I'm there wearing my red. Go St. John's.
Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you again soon on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast.